So,
yeah. So,
did we figure out who starts yet? It's been so long since we've recorded. I don't even know how we intro.
Hi, I'm Church, and I'm Taboo. Oh, no. Hi, I'm Church. No, hi, I'm Taboo, and I'm Church, and we're the Dark Souls 2.
Welcome to the Church, and I'm High.
Shut up, you're not High.
I'm not Church.
No, but I'm trying to work that shit out, all right? Hi, I'm Taboo, and I'm Church, and we're the Dark Souls 2, and welcome to the Dark Souls 2. So you got to start, go.
I'm Taboo.
And I'm Church.
And we are the Dark Souls 2.
And welcome to the Dark Souls 2, where this episode we're talking about, you didn't write it on the notes, so Harvest Valley.
It was written on the notes, you just had to find it.
Yeah, well.
Anyway. And seeing as Harvest Valley is an incredibly small area, the very, very start of Earthen Peak as well.
Yes, up to the Covetous Demon.
Correct.
How do you say it?
Covetous.
Covetous. Like covet. Like yeah. Covet my neighbor's ass. You don't covet your neighbor. Like, maybe you do. Who knows?
Maybe I do covet ass. Why neighbor?
That's what it says somewhere. Maybe the Bible. Who knows? Nobody knows. Anyway, so what's new in the world of Dark Souls there, Taboo?
Where have you been the last 2 weeks, more importantly?
Oh, Indonesia. That's not important.
Well, what's important? People have been wondering where we went. So.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, my housemate who we've mentioned a couple of times on the podcast, his mum got married. It was a beautiful ceremony. And
that
was
all an awesome time. Said.
Yeah.
Cool. So, apologies that we haven't released sooner, but that is why. So, everyone send hate mail to Scott at... We don't actually have a personal email address.
I think you mean Scott, atthedarksouls2.com.
Yeah.
.au, maybe.
I can make that for you if you want it.
No, thank you. No,
okay. Just... Otherwise, people will know where to send the hate mail.
Yeah, they can just send it to you.
So, what's been happening in Dark Souls?
Well, a few things.
Seeing as you asked me.
Perhaps most excitingly, the video of Project Beast was leaked. I mean, holy shit. You have a skeptical look on your face.
Well, you said perhaps most excitingly. I think the next bit of news is probably more exciting.
Well, the other bit of news is that the three DLCs have been announced. But I think a whole new game is more exciting, especially with all the intrigue and mystery involved.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you're probably right. So, on that note, we discussed the... Project Beast leaked screenshots a few weeks ago.
We did.
And all that's happened since is there's been a little development where they have now released some footage, or not they have now released, I suppose, some footage has been leaked.
Yeah, and I mean, has it really been leaked? Is this like a sex tape where you just you know, leak it with inverted commas, you know, for publicity or whatever?
I don't know. I don't know. Yeah, it's a good question. I've been wondering if it is just publicity, but
yeah, maybe
it does feel legitimate.
We should look actually and see if there's any news about them hiring anyone like Kim Kardashian. You never know.
Paris Hilton.
Yeah?
They're onto a winner. So yeah, it's basically just the running footage that matches the screenshots that we leaked.
Yeah, so there's nothing in the footage that you didn't already see in the screenshots, really,
except there's animation now.
Yes, that's what a video is. I mean, shit,
you said
man.
There's nothing in them that you haven't seen. I just, you know, wanted to spell it out for you.
All right. Well, if you weren't already aware, the animation contains moving pictures, okay?
Thanks, Josh.
Shit, it's like 1910 or something.
Now, one thing that has become clear from the animation, though, is that there are shotguns.
Yeah, there's definitely some kind of shotgun type thing.
But you weren't entirely, I don't know, you were sort of on base with your concerns when we were talking about the screenshots, because you were saying how it looks like the guy's holding it from the butt, which just seems weird.
I mean, that's how I hold the ladies. A fearful look to my girlfriend, anyway.
But yeah, it seems it's not very clear, but it seems like the butt of the shotgun is like mounted on his elbow or something, almost like the forearm has been chopped off.
Have you heard that saying? This is probably a particularly Australian saying, mate, you wouldn't know your ass from your elbow. So when you said the butt is attached to his elbow, I was like, ah, well.
Maybe he does.
Maybe they're the same thing. But Yeah, or maybe from the video, I've watched it a few times, it's hard to tell. Maybe he's just holding it backwards for ease of movement or whatever, and then he flips it up. You know, like he throws it forward and catches it and pulls the trigger. Who knows? You know what I mean? You can imagine that kind of like, you know.
Maybe.
Like cool Western type dude.
Yeah. So that's about all there is to it. It just sort of goes with screenshots for those that want to see it. We've posted it up as a post on our website. So check it out, darksouls2.com. Yeah, there's a video now.
So the other bit of news is that there's DLCs announced for Dark Souls 2. All three DLCs announced at once.
Yeah, trilogy. And they all seem to be matching a theme where we're going to seek some king's crown. One crown per episode.
Yes. So there's a description. The Lost Crowns trilogy will take you through entirely original areas to face a slew of unknown enemies, overcome diabolic challenges. Do they mean diabolical challenges? Maybe. It's a mystery. And take on fearsome bosses.
Yeah. The first episode, though, the one that's coming out shortly, surprisingly shortly, July 22nd, it's not far away.
He checked his watch just now.
Yeah.
He's like, well,
wasn't sure if we're in June or July yet.
7 o'clock. Oh, shit, any minute, you know.
So episode one, Crown of the Sunken King, is releasing July 22nd for PC. And it seems for all these release dates, the consoles are releasing a day later, which is interesting. Because PC missed out with the release of the game by weeks and weeks. And now we're getting it a day before the consoles. It's almost like they're trying to say sorry.
Yeah. Well, I don't forgive you.
Seeing as the Crown of the Sunken King is the first episode that's coming out soon, I tried to sort of focus in on that one a little bit. We'll give you a bit of a quip about the next two. But the first one, I don't know, doesn't it appear that it may be about Hades?
It's got to be about Hades.
Yeah, you made the comment because it's called the Crown of the Sunken King.
Yeah,
and we know Hades sunk.
And you see in the video, someone's fighting a Hades knight.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's Hades. I mean, it's what other area is sunken?
And we've not heard anything about the Sunken King yet. The second episode is called The Crown of the Old Iron King, which we're all familiar with. And the third, The Crown of the Ivory King. Again, another one that know nothing about.
Yeah. And so the Ivory King is set, it seems, in a kind of icy Skyrim-y type environment.
Yeah. It says set in an ancient temple, wrung with freezing storms, towering walls, and a hollowing emptiness. Challenged by forces that are one with the freezing elements, low visibility, and esoteric abilities. So it seems to imply that it's going to be kind of cold and dank and depressing, but sort of made me wonder, like, the things like esoteric abilities and freezing elements, maybe we're going to see some weapons similar to the Spider Fang that you can get from one of the boss soul items a little later in the game, which is used to slow enemies' movements. I'm wondering if they'll sort of do more things like that, where it goes beyond just bleed or poison. It actually has an effect in game.
Oh, it'd be good if they'd introduce some new elements.
Yeah, that's cool. I like it.
Yeah.
Crown of the Iron King, we touched on. Massive tower engulfed in a black mist where flame, smoke, and sorcery lurk. But with the episode one, as we said, it appears to be a sort of large cavernous inside a cave with these stepped pyramids and waterfalls and all kinds of stuff. Looks really cool.
Mm.
Kind of, I don't know, Indiana Jones-ish.
Yeah. Large and cavernous, like your mum's heart, mind, soul, brain. Now, these are all coming out for $9.99 each or $24.99 for a season pass on Steam, which gives you all of them.
Yeah, so that's about it for the new DLC. There's not much else to be known. It's all idle speculation at the moment, but it's coming soon. So, obviously, these episodes are writing themselves for us. We've got probably another 6 months to a year of content and bloody DLC comes out.
Yeah.
We'll be hanging around for a while, it seems.
Yeah, you have to stick with us or we'll just be releasing episodes to nobody. I'll do it.
Our tens of fans. Our tens dozens, of them.
Dozens. Taboo, dozens. 24 minimum.
Moving on to some community talk.
Yeah.
We got some real positive feedback about doing a live stream. And for the last couple of weeks, for those that jumped on board already, you've probably been getting heaps of tweets and emails saying that I've been going live because I've been playing around with the stream and seeing what quality I can get it at and not doing anything really serious, but just more trying to get the settings right. So when we do go live, it's good to go.
Yeah.
That said, the other night, I started doing that and somebody jumped in chat. 40 Licks was his name. And yeah, he ended up having me play for like an hour and a half, and five people came and went, and Germ popped in. And yeah, so it was a great time. So I'm really looking forward to actually going live properly, because I've never done stream before and it was so much fun.
Yeah, look, I'm kind of looking forward to it as well. We're going to do a thing where...
I think we'll keep it under wraps a little bit for now, but suffice to say, we got some ideas that we think are going to be entertaining to watch, because let's face it, we're about as good as the next guy at playing Dark Souls. So we hope to make up for what we lack in technical ability with entertainment value. So if that's something that you feel like you're interested in, absolutely click follow on our Twitch stream. That's twitch.tv/TheDarkSouls2. We'll leave a link in the link dumps. Yeah, click follow and you'll get an alert in your emails when we go live.
Well, what we need to do is tell people about a date.
Yeah, absolutely. So watch all of our media. We'll put it up on the website. We'll throw it up on Twitter, Facebook, all that stuff. Yeah. And we'll announce a date officially.
We'll announce a date and time. So there's some interesting news about that obelisk in Majula, which I didn't know about till I read your notes, but I find very interesting. Yeah, so the obelisk in Majula, where it says these letters have been worn beyond recognition, it turns out, if I believe your notes, and I wonder sometimes, in the Portuguese version, and only the Portuguese version, it says, Os gigantes cruzaram os mares, talvez para voltar para casa. And I don't speak any Portuguese. What does that mean?
Shall I translate?
Yes.
The giants crossed the seas, perhaps to return home. So it's interesting, yeah, this came about recently where one of the guys on Reddit had done some digging and discovered, yeah, as you said, that there's no variation from the general these letters have been worn beyond recognition in every other game, just translated into their native languages, except in the Portuguese one. And it sort of raises questions like, was this intended? Did they accidentally slip through? Was it a translation error? yeah, so I don't know, it seems interesting.
I mean, why is it like that? That's really interesting.
Yeah, I don't know that anyone knows at the moment. It might have just been a mistake. It may have just been like on some developer's note somewhere that slipped through to the Portuguese version. I mean, that's it.
Maybe they changed it late in the development process, and then for that version, that release, they never changed it back. They released it to those countries. I mean, the Portuguese version is a relatively recent
Yeah, interestingly, patch. There was no Portuguese version when the game came out. That came out with patch version 1.04. So it's a new development. Very weird.
It is weird.
Now, we normally go into tips at this point, but I kind of feel like 10 episodes in, it's scraping the barrel a bit with the tips at the moment for beginners. I kind of feel like we've covered all the important stuff. So I think I'm going to phase this.
Have a tips reduction?
Yes, that's precisely right. I feel like I'm going to phase this segment out and I'm going to replace it with Mod of the Week. But I'll put that at the end of the episode from now on, I think.
There's no innuendo there. But yes, no, I think that's a really good idea. The modding community is growing and I like mods as much as the next.
Yeah. And, you know, for the console listeners, if you're vehemently against modding and PC playing, then you can just tune out at the end of the episode.
Yeah, but then you won't hear the hilarious shit we put after the outro.
Yeah, your loss. Should be a PC player.
Yeah, man.
That's what you get.
Yeah.
So, shall we...
Yeah, let's do it.
Shall we cover Harvest Valley?
Yeah, let's cast a pod. So, last episode, we got to this area by killing the Skeleton Lords, and you walk out of their arena through a chasm. Immediately on your right. This is one of those levels that's really kind to you and gives you a bonfire early on.
So, yeah, sit at the bonfire. And which bonfire is it? The Poison Pool bonfire. Now, this area. What do we know about this area, Church?
It's a mining area, and it was supposedly used to collect resources for the old Iron King.
Which, when you live in a massive, awesome town of iron, I suppose you'd need some mining resources on hand.
Yeah, that shit doesn't just fall out of the sky, you know, except in a meteor shower. It's true. I thought about, I said that, and then I was like, wait a minute, sometimes it does.
Meteors so are sometimes made out of iron. Otherwise, that's very accurate.
People on Twitter, well, generally, almost always, it's Ferris. People on Twitter are going to be like, you idiots, you don't even know what a meteor is made of. So, you know, you got to clarify these things. Otherwise, it looks stupid.
Save the hate mail.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to make you an email address now. You know, we may never check it, but just so people feel like they...
To vent. Yeah, people need to talk sometimes. So, apparently, while the miners were... and probably they were miners in those days, you know, under 10. While they were mining deeper and deeper into the ground, they opened up some cracks that let out some poisonous gas, and that's why the entire area looks like it does today.
Yeah, so you're going to come across a lot of these poison pools. It's a very big theme for the area, poison, and it seems like it seeped out of the ground at some point during the mining process. Now, with that in mind, we're going to highly suggest you bring some green moss with you as you enter into the area, and while you're at it, at this bonfire, we're going to come across Gavlin shortly. So it's worth throwing a lot of your, you know, crappy items that you may put into the box on to your person to get rid of.
Do you use the box?
Not really.
I've never used
the box.
I did
on my first character because I thought, oh, it's here. I should use it. And then I realized it really isn't
necessary.
It doesn't
cost you anything to have it in. It's just a little bit more scrolling.
Hmm.
I mean, yeah, I don't understand.
I think there is a hard limit eventually where you can't put anything else on your person.
No, I just keep selling shit to Gavlin.
Enormous. So, yeah, never
Thanks
come across
for
it.
Noticing. There's a lot of windmills in the area as well, I notice.
Yeah, and that seems to be more relevant for next episode. It
yes.
definitely has something to do with the poison, and we'll definitely be covering that more next episode. But the long and short is in the next area, there will be a boss that's channeling the poison from this area towards her for her own reasons. We'll cover that more in depth next week.
Now, there's heaps of titanite shards here.
Yeah, and because of that, you know, it makes sense. It's a mining area. We're not going to cover every single little item, as we said a few weeks ago. We're not supposed to be a direct walk-through podcast. So, you know, just keep your eye open. If there's something particularly hidden, we'll point it out. But if it's an item that we've discussed before, we've discussed its lore implications, it's not relevant to the area. If you come across these items, just keep your eyes open. We're not going to cover every single little drop, souls
yeah, of course.
Lost undead and that kind of rubbish.
You can look after yourself. So, just outside that bonfire, the first thing you'll notice is the...
cleavage.
Yes. comely young Cloanne.
Comely yum.
Fuck. Shit. That's not what I meant, right? Oh my god.
It's not that funny.
Oh god. Anyway.
Do you want to try that again, Church?
The comely young Cloanne. It's a pretty young girl, Cloanne. Cleavage and shit. Anyway, so Cloanne.
Yes, she is stone trader Cloanne.
Yeah, she is the daughter of Lenegrast.
Yeah, and we learn this through dialogue that comes out throughout the game. But you would remember from pretty much our first episode in Majula, Lenegrast had a lot of dialogue about his daughter, and you know, this girl that's free spirit that's just wandering all around the place, and he just wishes she would settle down and stay in one place where it's safe and not put herself in these risks. But she obviously seemed to not listen to her dad too much, because we found her out in Harvest Valley. And
I'm Cloanne, an all stone trader. I travel about collecting rare stones, which I sell to make my living. I never planned to visit this God's forsaken place, but I don't know. I just sort of ended up here. But now that I'm here, I've been scouting around for rare bits.
She can sell you stones and ores, you know, to upgrade your weapons and such.
Yeah, and she starts with meager counts, but as you do certain things throughout the game, there's going to be, I guess, checkpoints throughout the game, which aren't apparent to you as a player, but once you hit them, she'll expand her inventory, or where she only had 10 titanite shards before, she will now have unlimited or what have you. So keep checking back with her. If you sort of buy her out of her stock for one thing, you know, as you progress through the game, you may want to go back and check and see if she's now got more or unlimited or new items that would be useful to you.
Yes. So enough about her. Down a slope to your left, and there's a gassy poison pit, but there's also, you described this skeleton as intently listening to the wall.
Yeah, there's this just skeleton sort of stuck in the wall as you go down this thing, and he's...
It's innocuous, you'd pass it without noticing, but if you look, he's definitely, there's something in there that he can hear.
Yeah, it just, it's very...
So later on, you'll find some skellies. Sorry, I cut across you there.
No, I had nothing to say.
I was hoping you had nothing to say because I cut across you like shit. Maybe it wasn't going anywhere. Anyway, further on, you'll notice some piles of bones on the ground turning to skellies.
These are the same skeletons that you'll come across anywhere else. Nothing particularly important to them. It would appear that they were probably the miners in the area that have subsequently died due to time, age, poison, who knows what. And as such, they're now here to wreck your day.
Yeah, well, I'd be pretty angry too if I got killed with poor working conditions. There's also these giant, they're called mounted overseers.
Yeah, and it seems that with these guys, it is the humanoid creature on top of them that is controlling the show. Yeah. But the things that we're seeing are described as monstrosities, and they have this makeshift kind of saddle on their back, which the overseers ride upon. And yeah. It seems that they are using them to get above and look down at all the workers in the area to get a sort of bird's eye view and keep the workers in line.
Yeah, and we know that the creation of golems isn't uncommon, so whether they're an actual type of demon or whether they're just constructed golems for a purpose...
Yeah, maybe.
I think that's probably gone.
Never really thought of that. It's possible. I didn't get that impression. I'm not sure where they come from, and it seems to be the only place that they pop up. I'm not sure if there's too much more to them. But I did notice that they're wearing shorts, which seemed a bit odd because, I don't know, the only things that really wear clothes are self-aware beings, and it just seemed weird that these things were completely controlled by the overseers, yet they still have enough self-consciousness to want to hide their modesty.
Well, maybe the overseers just didn't want to see their
giant penises. Floppy wongs.
Yeah.
So they have this big overhand dark spell attack, which is a...
Dark orb, it looks like.
Yeah.
But bigger.
Yeah, enormous. And it does a crap ton of damage, so be aware of that. But it does have that incredibly slow wind-up, so it's very easy to dodge. However, what was noticed is that it doesn't really have a vertical trajectory. It just kind of comes straight out ahead. So as long as you're always above them, you pretty much won't ever get attacked by it.
You just range them.
Yeah. So if you've got any sort of range spell, you can do that. Otherwise, like we said, the only real risk to taking them on one-on-one is that you have to do it in a poison pit.
Yes. Now, in that poison pit, there are heaps of items, some silky stones and titanite. By each item, you notice there's generally a little bit of high ground nearby, so you don't have to sprint all the way back up to the top.
Yeah, so it is possible to sort of get them all in one quick little run around, as long as you're willing to sort of wait for your poison bar to go down. But it raises the question, something that you pointed out, is possible that with the overseers themselves will take poison damage, which is why they stand on top of these monstrosities that are immune to the poison. So they're sort of above the gases below to stay out of it.
True, but if you think about the time at which the overseers were created, there were miners in that pit. It was before they cracked open the earth and unleashed the poison. So probably that wasn't the purpose, but it would explain why the overseers on their backs are still alive. Because you notice that later on, very soon, you'll encounter some undead blacksmiths. And those guys take the poison damage. If you chase them or push them down into the hole, they will die from the poison.
Yeah, so they're very resistant from being in the area, it would seem, but not completely.
Yes. So
once you've collected all the items in the area, you can go up this little ramp into a small adjacent room. And in this room, there's a smaller little gaseous pit, which you can drop into. And there's kind of a little alcove, which is a bit hidden, with a chest inside of it. And inside that chest, you get to pick up a...
fire seed and a divine blessing. There's also a fragrant branch of yore upstairs as well.
Yeah, so back up the little ramp near that chest and into a second little room and...
Gavlan.
One of your favourites.
Yeah, I like Gavlan. He's a simpleton, you know. That guy. Well, actually, that's a bit harsh. His English isn't great. That doesn't mean he's a simpleton. He's a Gurm and he buys shit off you, and that's awesome.
Yeah, so you said that exactly the same way you said it on the episode we met Gavlan for the first time.
Well, I just think
it's awesome. Gavlan. He's awesome.
I did even probably did the same chopping hand motion.
So, yeah, we've discussed Gavlan from No Man's Wharf.
Yes.
Where we meet him for the first time.
And once again, once you're done trading with him, he will disappear.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure if it's once you're done trading or if once you've exhausted his dialogue.
Well, it's possible, but I think that the point with Gavlan is that you get to trade with him once and you can't just keep going back and exploiting the fact that he's there.
Yeah.
So which, I think probably you trade with him once, but you know, you can check.
Yeah. I'll look into that.
You're not going to look into it.
I always do.
Okay. I'm not going to look into it. next to Gavlan is a chest with a raw stone that's used for altering weapons. Raw is interesting. It raises base damage on a weapon but removes all scaling.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you'd only use it for weapons that don't scale or that have bugger all scaling.
Or, you know, a weapon that isn't congruent with your type of character.
Oh, yeah, sure. Like if I find a weapon that needs high faith scaling, for instance, I don't have much faith, so, you know.
Yeah, and... it was pretty much useless in the previous game. It was a sort of beginner trap using the raw because you'd see it for the first time with the first blacksmith and go, "Ooh, this is going to give me more damage," but you didn't realize much about scaling at the time, and so the trade-off wasn't great. But in this game, the scaling just doesn't quite seem that great. So it seems to have more utility in this game, I would say. So check it out. I mean, if you found a weapon that you really want to use, but it's not quite giving you enough damage and it doesn't really scale with your class type, maybe try going for a raw enchant.
Yeah. So, back outside, up a ramp, and you'll enter a clearing with two mounted overseers guarding a gate. There's a ladder on the right, And there are some hexing urns on a corpse.
Yeah, up top of the ladder, that is.
Yeah. Hexing urns obviously are thrown at people to do dark damage.
And yeah, you know, you can use these hexing urns to range these overseers from here if you'd like, or you can, you know, use any other sort of range thing because you are up on top of this ladder now, so you're above them, so they're really, really easy to take out.
And there's a few undead laborers milling around.
But they don't really aggro, and if they do, they're just not scary.
No. Well, they're scary looking. If I saw one, I'd be scared.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But they're not threatening in any way. Yeah. I mean, they're threatening looking. If I saw one, I'd feel threatened. But they don't do much damage. Except to your psyche, I guess. If you see them, I'd feel damaged.
You done?
Anyway.
So once you've collected the hexing urns, down the ladder, up a little bit, and up a second ladder. And this is where you'll come across the lever to raise the gate that the overseers have been guarding.
Yes. Now, through that raised gate, there's another bonfire. Yeah. This place just gives you bonfires so easily. I love it.
Yeah, I don't know that I do love it, but yeah, it's a small area.
I mean, I like getting access to bonfires, because nothing worse than when you're low on spells and you think, maybe there's a bonfire just ahead, maybe there's not, you press on, you die, it's very frustrating.
Yeah, but that was part of the...
Oh, I agree, but you know, I like to just be... It's bonfires are security, you know?
I know, and that's what I have a problem with, I guess. There's lower risk, less reward.
Yeah, you're right. So, out of the bonfire room and to the right. Now, you go into a courtyard with some structures, some wooden structures built above holes in the ground. Probably those structures had pulleys on them, and you're mining a bunch of ore or rock, and you chuck it in the bucket, and it gets pulled up and excavated from the ground that way?
Yeah, absolutely. They're all above holes on the ground, so they definitely seem like the kind of thing that would have been used for excavating or lifting materials up out of the ground.
Or lowering materials down into the ground.
Well, there's a novel idea.
Or both.
Or both. So, from the entry that you make into the courtyard, 90 degrees to the left.
Yeah, so let's say the entry is at 6 o'clock, the bottom of the clock, just to make things easier. So at 9 o'clock, which is 90 degrees to the left, there's a corridor with an exit on the right, a third of the way up. Now, people that listen to this podcast probably don't know this, but I have to work to the notes that Dabu writes. So let me read you this sentence, right, which is supposed to jog my memory about how the area is. Corridor with exit on right, a third the way up, and another on the left right, two-thirds up.
Makes perfect sense.
On the left, right.
Except for that part. So do you want to explain what I meant, seeing as apparently I don't?
Well, all right. So you walk down a corridor, right? And
right?
Yeah.
Or right. Left?
So there's an exit on the right, a third of the way
up. Is this at 9 o'clock or 2100?
At 9 o'clock, right?
Left?
Listen. So you walk into the corridor. On your right, a third of the way up, there is an opening. Further along, two-thirds of the way up, there's an opening on the left.
And as you approach the opening on the left, at the end is a big wooden barrier.
Yes.
But if you hang around for a half second, you'll get a big overseer smashing through that barrier. And this is a hint. Don't take on the overseer immediately. If you kill him there and then out of panic, then you will regret it, because there is a second wooden barrier behind this overseer. Yes. In the little room that he was hiding.
And you won't break it with any weapon.
So you have to sneak in behind him and provoke him into striking that barrier before taking him on. This leaves you with not a lot of room to move. But
it's a pretty tight space.
Fortunately, yeah, as we said, they have a very slow wind up to their moves. They're very telegraphed, so you can just sort of stay behind him, and once you get him to break down the barrier, take him out.
Now, behind the barrier, there's...
Secret area.
Yeah. An old knight pike and an old knight great shield are to be found behind there. The descriptions say, an undated ancient great shield or pike, wielded by a warrior from a time so ancient that there exists no record of his endeavours, has extremely low durability.
Yeah, now this seems to match with the old knight set that we were getting from the old knights in Hades Tower of Flame. The old knights were the giant sentinel type things that you took on, and you'd get their giant sets, and they were the ones that were described with having a flash of power right before they break or whatever the little quip
sometimes
was there.
Just as a thing loses its whatever, it unleashes its last great flash of power or some such.
Something to that effect. And again, those ones had massively low durability as well. So yeah, I don't know who this particular old knight is that they talk about. Is it just the old knights from Hade, or what?
I think it must be the old knights. But no, they talk about a warrior. And they talk about a specific warrior. They just mean like, oh yeah, some warrior had this.
It's a bit of a question mark for me.
It's a mystery.
Just the way it was written was a bit odd.
Yeah. Now, turn around and go through the exit 2/3 of the way up, now on the right. That's the right, not the left.
Yeah, so from here you drop down into a hole which you can't get out of, and in that hole is chest. In the chest
is a rotten pine resin and a poison stone.
Yeah.
So the poison stone obviously turns weapons poisonous, or adds poison resistance to weapons and armor, to shields and armor.
Yeah, which makes sense for the area.
Yes. Now, you can't go back, so you have to drop into a hole. In this area, you can't see a damn thing because of all the green mist everywhere. But if you walk straight ahead in a line, you'll end up getting to the end, up a ladder, and into the courtyard that you came out of last time.
Yeah, and so from here, back into the corridor at 9 o'clock, and 2/3 up on the right, you can go into another little courtyard area, and immediately you'll get ambushed by 4
artificial undead. Now, these are the same guys with the sickles from Huntsman's Copse, and they look cool, you know, so if you ever catch one on a corner and you can get a good look while he's lumbering towards you. Yeah, I like
that. Yeah, because you need to do that with this game, don't you? It's hard to get,
you can't get a good look at the enemies.
Detail.
A lot of them disappear.
You know, they kill you.
Yeah, and then they're standing over your corpse.
Yeah. And then usually it just zooms straight into their crotch, right, as I'm trying to have a look at their face or something.
That's your excuse, is it?
Hmm.
Now, I generally, in that area, I use Yearn. If you cast Yearn into the middle of the floor, they'll come out and look at it like a bunch of big goofs, and you shoot them in the back with your spells.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the way I dealt with it. Failing that, if you're still struggling. In this area, what you're going to find is what I'm calling cells. They're kind of like little jail cells, but they're just little sections that are boarded up with wooden barricades. And don't be fooled into trying to break them all down now while dealing with these 4 patchwork undead or artificial undead. Instead, you can go up this little ramp to a slightly raised portion, and the 3rd little cell on the left you can break through, and it leads to another corridor. Now, if you stand in there, the patchwork undeads will only be able to filter through one at a time. So it's kind of a choke point. It allows you to take them on one at a time. If they, you know, are aggroing too hard, you can just sort of back off, and eventually they'll de-aggro and walk back away, and you can take them on again.
Yes.
So that helps. Now, once you've taken those out, clear the little area from all the cells, and you'll find a Skeptic Spice and a Simpleton Spice.
Yes, that's cool.
Yeah, they seem to pop up a bit in this area. We'll mention a couple more as we go through, and it made me wonder if there's a reason for that. And I checked out their item description, because I don't have it committed to memory. I'm not that good. And there's nothing that sort of stood out that made it make sense that they should be here. So I'm wondering if maybe they're the kind of things that are coming out of, you know, a mining process, maybe?
Maybe. But, or maybe it's like the spice in Dune.
Yeah.
Comes out of the ground.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Warning that.
So, from that area,
go back up to the cell that we broke open with the corridor.
Ah, yes.
And that'll lead to a longer corridor, which goes left and right. It sort of tees off from where you've walked through. If you go to the right, you'll end up back in the courtyard. But if you turn left, you will find a crystal lizard.
Mm.
Be aware, because this crystal lizard provokes fairly easily and will run straight off a ledge, which, I've got to say, it must be a pretty shit life being a crystal lizard, right?
How do you figure?
You're just hunted down all the time for your insides. So you're either dumb enough to get crushed by enemies just so they can steal your goodies, or you're smart enough to run away from the enemies, but then dumb enough to run straight off a cliff.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Does he die, I wonder? I mean, because that's the thing about this particular one. Most of them take a few seconds to burrow into the ground or whatever. This one just disappears straight away. Just goes off a cliff.
Yeah, they're a bit like lemmings in that regard.
Hmm.
You've heard about that, right?
Yeah, but it's not true.
What?
That lemmings jump off a cliff.
Yeah, that's the part that I was going to say. It was actually done by Disney for a... They were making a documentary about them, and they realized how uninteresting they were, so the cameramen actually herded them up and caused them to run off the cliffs themselves, and they claimed that this was normal behavior for them just to make the documentary more interesting. So basically, the cameramen were responsible for killing them all.
But who is...
And that was a common misconception ever since.
But who decides in, like, the boardroom, oh, yeah, let's make a documentary about lemmings, and then you go and you hire all the... You have an application process, you hire a cameraman, and you buy the cameras, and you buy the gear, and you book the tickets, and you book the accommodation, you go to the site, you get there, you're halfway through filming, you go, are these things are shit? Like, who does that?
Simpler times, bro. It's probably the
simpler
first time,
times.
Probably the first time they've been studied. It wasn't something you could just check out on Snopes.
Yeah, but do you reckon those things are interesting? Oh, probably. Better get a cameraman.
Yeah. Somebody had to.
A little rodent. A rat's interesting?
Yes.
I guess. Anyway, were we talking about a video game or something?
Yeah, we were actually.
Yes.
So if you do manage to get the goodies off the crystal lizard's guts, turn around and head back up the corridor and drop back into the courtyard. But just before you do, there's a corpse with another fragrant branch of yore.
Yes. So,
from the fragrant branch of yore, drop back into the courtyard and you'll have a chance to hit back at the bonfire if you need the health or the resources and exit from the bonfire back into the little area. This time, instead of going 90 degrees to the left, we're going 90 degrees to the right.
To the 3 o'clock position.
Yes. Yes. Don't want to let that analogy die, do you?
It's a good analogy. It works.
Okay. So you can exit out of this little section into another big gaseous pit area. But before we do, there's a hole in the ground in the courtyard right in front of that door. And we're going to drop into it.
Mm-hmm.
This one's a nightmare. I get so lost in this one. You can't see squat. And it's kind of a bit curved, unlike the last pit that we fell into, which was a dead straight line. So the best advice I can give is hug the right-hand wall with your right hand and just stick up against it and follow it around the curve. You will get an opportunity to pick up another skeptic spice.
I think it's a simpleton spice.
Off a corpse through this little corridor, but be quick because the whole time you're taking poison and plop out the little end and up a ramp and just recover.
Yeah. So as you plop out the hole, you'll see two overseers, but you're now up the ramp, so take them out from the higher level.
Or you can run into the pit and take out their ankles again, but once again, you're taking poison damage the whole time.
And who wants to get their hands dirty?
Easy for a master caster to say.
Yeah, well.
So back onto the floor where the overseers were, and you can go a little further up and pick up the chameleon spell.
A sorcery that dates farther back than recollection, allows you to blend into your surroundings.
Yeah, so it's very much like the Silver Talisman in that regard. Silver Talisman is a burnable item that you can use to turn into an inanimate object from the area.
Yes, and by burnable we mean consumable.
Yes, that's correct. Whereas it seems more accurately that I'd say the talismans were based on this sorcery, because the sorcery is ancient. It comes from the area that you get from the DLC in the previous game.
Mm-hmm.
So in Ulusiel, they sort of developed these mimic and illusory miracles, and chameleon was one of them. It's used to turn into some random inanimate object from the area in which you're in, which can be used mostly only for PvP. I can't think of any PvE application for it.
You know, on all my characters in both games, I've never used it once.
Oh, I love it. It's so even much fun.
So you're saying that if I went into, like, Sen's Fortress and used it, those lizard men would know that I was there?
Of course, yeah.
Oh, I see.
So the enemies will continue to attack you, but it's clearly designed for PvP and just trolling, basically. Or, yeah. I suppose, you know, there's the potential to use it in someone. Case you're, you know, suffering or aren't ready for PvP and you just want them to go away or what have you.
Mm. I mean, it's neat. It's a cool little thing.
Yeah, I love any game that gives you the ability to troll within the parameters of the game itself.
So, back up the ramp, out of the pit, across a little rickety wooden bridge, and there's your first undead steelworker.
Yeah, you mentioned something, I think you said blacksmiths a little earlier, but this is who you were referring to. Well, no, that was semi-accurate. It's been alluded that these guys may have been blacksmiths for the old Iron King, helping make his armors and his weapons and whatnot, but it just didn't seem right to me. That's how the guidebook describes them, but their hammers are just far too big for any sort of practical weapon creation.
Well, not all blacksmithing is about making weapons.
Go on.
Well, some blacksmithing is about making things that aren't weapons.
Okay.
You know, like the hinges on a gate or...
I've still always pictured blacksmithing as more intricate type stuff, not...
Well, anything that's made out of iron or metals is made by a blacksmith. You know, think about a village blacksmith in like medieval Europe. He would have made horseshoes and door hinges and belt buckles and all kinds of stuff like that. Probably never made a sword in his whole life.
Nothing that feels like an enormous cinder block on the end of a blade.
Yeah, but you know, think about the scope of some of the things that are in this game, like the big giant gates and all that kind of jazz.
Well, that's what I was going to get at. They seemed far more practical to be used for construction, which would make sense with the areas that we're going to come across a bit later throughout this spoke. We do come across the old Iron King's realm in a few areas' time. And this whole spoke seems to have been in some way based on the old Iron King. You know, we talk about how he had his hunts in the Huntsman's Copse and how these guys seem to be farming materials for him in this area. So it only makes sense that in some way most of these areas are designed to serve the old Iron King.
Yeah, I think you're right. But I think they are. I think there's some kind of blacksmith. Guidebook says.
I agree that they're some sort of, I guess, blacksmith. But yeah, I think it's more for construction than weapons and armor.
Yeah, and they drop titanite shards, which suggests that they're blacksmithing.
I suppose that's one way of thinking about it.
Can you suggest another?
No.
Yeah. Then it's the only way of thinking about it. I don't know. I'm just being a dick. It's in my nature.
So it's puff course, really?
Yes. I don't mean to be a dick all the time, you know. It just comes out of me.
You like exposing your dick?
What? Is this some kind of come on? Or offer? No, thank you very much. So,
from this bridge, once you've dispatched the undead steelworker, you can go into Earthen Peak from here, or you can head off to the left and down a little sort of ledgeway above the poison pit, and into a new little section. And this section is nice. It's a little
serene. There's an artificial undead hanging about. You kill him, and then you come into this area where there's the only kind of ray of unadulterated sunshine in the area, and everything's green and lush because the sunshine's making it grow.
It's an altar.
Yes.
And it's the altar of sunlight in this game, which is used to join the Covenant. Except in this game, it's referred to as the Heirs of the Sun. So it's a little different to the Warriors of Sunlight from the previous game, but it's definitely a reference to Solaire's Covenant. Now,
yes.
For those that haven't played the previous game, you might be a bit confused as to all these Praise the Suns and that kind of stuff that are popping up everywhere.
Yes.
It's a sort of throwback to the last game where there was a character called Solaire of Astora, and he was a crowd favorite. He became a bit of a meme for the last game because he was so popular. He was one of the few friendly NPCs that was always cheery and always happy to see you. And he talked about jolly cooperation because his covenant was designed around helping other players out. And his whole quest was about finding his personal sun, and so he used to praise the sun. He used to worship the sun.
Yes.
And that's why you see these praise the sun messages all over the place. It's a little reference back to Solaire.
Yeah. Now, interestingly, this is something you pointed out to me, which I should have noticed, but I didn't. The altar is precisely identical in every way to the altar from the previous game.
So, again, more allusion to the fact that this may be the same area. It may just be Lordran anew.
Well, actually, see, I was thinking about that because the implication there seems to be that it's the exact same altar. But I mean, the thing is, how did the altar get into its current crumbled state? It must have all previously been intact, and then something happened to it over time, or it got attacked or whatever, and it crumbled. Correct. So it's not indestructible, right? And correct. So for it to survive the ages in completely the same shape, and also survive some vast restructuring of the ground on which it sits, because it was on the edge of a vast chasm in the previous game, and now it's under the ground in this game. What I think happened, if we're going to follow the lore on this one, is that probably it was worshipped in ancient times in Lordran, which may be this place or may not, and then recreated faithfully by the followers of that covenant in its destroyed state everywhere that covenant went.
Or potentially moved.
Yeah, that makes more sense. it's just simpler. Damn it. Yeah, right.
Maybe. Occam's razor.
Yeah, I suppose it makes sense.
Yeah, look, who knows? It's all kinds of weird things happen in this world, but there's so much in the game that suggests that Dranglake is just Lordran sometime later, but they do make sure that they never come out and explicitly say it. I'm sure they've only done that so that there would be debate online and people would always have to discuss it because it was never explicit. But I think it's pretty much a given at this point. I'm convinced.
Well, they always talk about how the land is cyclical and how this isn't the last kingdom that will stand here and it's not the first. And they even make mention of the fact that the curse knocks over kingdoms and then they come back and then the curse knocks them over again. So, yeah, it's entirely possible that it's Lordran.
I think so.
Yeah.
Now, the Altar of Sunlight. You can join this covenant, the Heirs of the Sun, at the altar by kneeling in front of it. You can also get the Praise the Sun gesture, which is nice. But if you join the covenant, the entire purpose of the covenant is to collect sunlight medals. And the sunlight medals you give to the Altar of Sunlight to level up throughout the covenant. The way you get these medals is by joining the covenant and then laying a large soapstone and summoning yourself into somebody else's game and helping them with a boss fight. If you use the small soapstone, unfortunately it doesn't count, but if you use the large soapstone and succeed in fulfilling your duty, both you and the host will get a sunlight medal, whether the host is in the covenant or not.
Yes.
Up until this point, I've actually been avoiding just subconsciously avoiding the orange summon signs purely on the basis that I figure, oh, you know, other people choose them, I'll use the white ones, give the white guys a chance. But I realize now maybe I should have been going for the orange ones, because then I would have been collecting these sunlight medals each time they succeeded. Yeah, you could have just leveled
up straight away.
Earlier on in the game, and, you know, maybe collected enough so when I finally did get to the Ultra, I could have leveled up fairly quickly.
Yeah. Interestingly, the Mounted Overseers that we've been seeing so far, they also drop sunlight medals.
Yeah.
I mean, which is probably for people that aren't online. Not everyone has a good connection, you know, and it's
so
impossible.
I think that's more to be the case than actually a lore reason. I think it's more just a game dynamic than...
But, I mean, this is the thing about lore. You can invent anything, can't you? You can say that the followers of the Covenant that were in this area were twisted and shaped by the old Iron King to become those monstrosities, and that's why they carry the Sunlight Medal, is because they were once the proponents of that cult, and that's why there's no members of that Covenant anymore, because the old Iron King took their land to mine on it. You can say that if you want.
You could. But the thing with lore is not that you could say all that, it's the way you say it. If you pause for a moment and said it with confidence, then people would actually go and re-say it. But because you said, oh, you could, you know, and made it up on the spot, nobody's going to buy it.
All right, I'm going to, at some point, I'm going to invent some kind of logical lore thing like that. I'm going to say it with confidence. I'm going to see if it takes off.
Absolutely, it will. Of course.
All right.
That's the beauty of this game.
Okay.
Anyone can be a cult leader. So, once you join the Covenant, we did sort of skim over, you get a sun seal, I think it's called?
Yes, it's a ring.
And you don't need to wear it while a part of the Covenant, but the beauty of the ring is it increases your miracle potency 5%.
Yes.
So you do more damage.
Actually, it's interesting, the description of the ring says, "Worship of the sun, now a lost belief, was once widespread amongst great warriors." So it's talking about, you know, how the religion died out. Now... Oh, you also, level 3 in this Covenant will get you the Sunlight Spear. Is that the thing the guy was PvPing with you earlier?
I believe so, yeah.
Quite an interesting spear, quite cool.
Yeah, so it's like the same miracle as the lightning that you can throw, except this one's a lot more powerful. Now, what I noticed, and only just recently, I was thinking about it seems to be the same lightning miracle that Gwyn uses in the opening cinematic in the previous game that was used to peel the flesh of the dragons. Which, to me, gives a little more credence to the ongoing rumour that Solaire may actually be Gwyn's son. The fact that Gwyn was using this miracle and Solaire was in a covenant that also in the previous game gave you this miracle, I don't know, it just sort of feels like there's that patriarchy there.
It strengthens the argument.
Yeah. Yeah, and the argument is fairly strong if you start digging, and I think this is just one extra little bit without going too much into the previous game. It's something worth pointing out for those that have been following that debate.
Well, I wouldn't mind talking to you about Solaire in a future episode, but for now, let's move on to Earthen Peak.
Okay. So, outside the little pathway that you took to get to the altar, and you'll head back to that little rickety bridge where you took on the blacksmith.
Steelworker.
And there's two ways to sort of head into the next section. You can go through the one at the end of the bridge, or you can turn right at the end of the bridge and go through the lower entry, which is what we're going to take now.
Now, you go into a room with loads of poison pots and two steelworkers. Interestingly, though, if you can get the steelworkers to crack enough pots, they'll get poisoned. But they
eventually,
are resistant.
Yeah.
Now, out of that room, onto a ledge overlooking a deep poison pool with a ramp on the right.
Yeah, careful not to fall off the ramp or the ledge, because the poison pool that you're seeing
has
no bottom. You will fall to your death. But if you go up the little corridor down the end of the ramp, you're trudging through a bit of poison liquid, but at the end, you can pick up a Estus Flask Shard. And then turn back, and there will be another little doorway on the left as you're heading back up the corridor.
Yes, and that's the one with the poison horn beetles, right?
Yeah, the poison horn beetles. Tell me about them.
They don't look anything like beetles I've ever seen. It's kind of like a mushroom.
Almost. Yeah. Yes.
Actually, you raised a really good point about, you know, they're poisonous, and the area is poisonous. So what you said was that you imagine a nest of these things under the ground that the miners crack open, and that's why there's poison in the area.
Yeah, it's, again, one of these things that you pick up online or in the guidebook or what have you that alludes to maybe the poison in the area comes from these beetles, because their whole deal is they dust the immediate area around them with poison, and if you stand too close, you'll take damage. So, yeah, it just sort of felt like maybe if they were responsible for the poison in the area. It may be that as the miners dug into the ground and they cracked past a certain layer that released this poisonous gas, it might be because they're sort of cracking into this layer where the beetles themselves dig into the ground, lay their massive nests, and the eggs maybe exude this poison.
Yeah, completely logical.
It might just be because I recently watched Godzilla and something similar happened.
Oh, way to ruin it. I haven't seen it. I don't know. Now, there's also a Ferris contraption in this room.
Yeah, so bam, straight in the kisser, another ghost face, and you can pick up in a chest...
a poison bite ring.
Yeah, which, wrong time to be picking it up. Would have been nice to get this earlier
At the beginning it'd be good.
But it will come in handy for the next area anyway.
And this is a Dark Souls 1 ring.
Yeah, the bite rings. There's a number of them. Blood bite, poison bite, I don't know if that's their official names. Something like
that. I can't recall either. But yes, so... in the first game, we learned they were commissioned by Sir Astor of Karim, supposedly also the guy who designed the Chotel.
Mm. And he also had a collection of purging stones. So it seems that Astor of Karim, he was responsible for all the bite rings in the previous games. He commissioned them to get made. Now, the fact that he had these rings, which were all designed for resistance, and he also had the purging stones, which were used to cure... getting what was called being cursed in the previous game, a little different to the curse in this game, sort of suggests that the guy had some sort of a desire to be resistant to things. But there's not much lore surrounding the guy. Couldn't really dig up too much. He only rarely comes up in the Chotel description and the poison bite description.
Still, a pretty clever guy.
Hmm.
Now back into the room with poison jars and steelworkers, up the ladder and into Earthen Peak proper.
Yeah, and in this little room, you can go up a ladder to that upper section. So as you enter through this little archway, the title card for Earthen Peak will come up.
Yes, and normally, being a new area, we would kill it here.
But because Harvest Valley was fairly short, no boss, only one little covenant, not even really an NPC for that. Well, there is no NPC for that covenant.
So we might as well kick on to the very first boss from Earthen Peak, just to pad this one out a bit. And also, Earthen Peak could chew up a lot of time next time, so we're shortening our...
discussion then. So we will cover Earthen Peak in a lot more detail next week, but we just want to touch in this little beginning area because it sort of makes it feel like we're wrapping up with the boss for the area because, I mean, this guy is almost immediately as you walk into Earthen Peak, so it still feels like it could be a part of the same area at the moment.
Exactly. It's good to have a boss.
So from the top of the ladder, as you enter into this area, you can go around the rim that's sort of overlooking that big poison pit that we told you not to fall into earlier. And as you head around, you can go up a little ramp, but halfway up the ramp, there's this poison beetle hiding in a little alcove, so be careful not to get done by him. Continue up the ramp, take out a couple more poison beetles and some steelworkers, and you can drop down into that alcove to take out the poison beetle.
Yes.
Can turn behind him and pick up another Skeptic Spice, which, as we said, they seem to pop up a bit in this area.
Mm-hmm.
So drop down from the poison beetle and head to the top of the ramp. And from the top of the ramp, you can jump off it to a little ledge that's sticking out over the poison pit.
Mm, you have to be really careful with that jump because the stupid rolling thing. It's the handiest way to do it, and I watched you do it earlier today, which reminded me, is if you're going to jump, angle it such that when you hit the ground, you kind of roll into the door jamb.
Yep.
The edge of the door. Because if you roll too far to the right, you're just going to fall off.
Yep. And straight to your death.
It's
and
freaking aggravating.
I think you watched me do it two or three times today.
Yeah, he kept doing it again and again. Actually, he wasn't jumping. He just runs off the edge.
Yeah.
And then goes, fuck! And then he goes, gets his souls and kills everything and jumps off the edge again. Fuck! It's ridiculous.
This game was never known for platforming. So, into this little room now, you'll notice a panel on the wall if you're being very observant. This panel...
it's got a hole in it.
Yeah, a bit reminiscent of the kind of stuff you'd find in Sen's Fortress, but just ignore it for the moment, because as you turn around and go to head down a corridor, you'll get taken on by a mannequin.
Yes, which are cool little guys, like a rogue or a thief, but without a head.
Friggin' brutal.
Yeah, well, they have this kind of four-strike attack, which can catch you, and you can't get away while they're striking you, so...
yeah, if you don't have high health, you can get taken out by one of their combos very easily.
Yes, and they've got those cool little, like, arm blade things going on.
Yeah.
That thing's cool.
So, yeah, take out the mannequin. Now, these guys do have a bit of lore behind them, but it is much more relevant to the next area and the boss of the next area.
Oh, that's cool. I don't know that, so that's interesting. I'll have to wait for next episode.
Yeah, I'll let you know.
Thank you. I'll probably read it in the notes. I probably will.
I'm sure you would.
Yeah, I will.
Thanks, Church. Keeping up your end of the bargain.
Yeah, I promise to read the notes. No, no. I mean, that's just an enemy that I don't really know the lore of. Sure. It's cool. I like that, learning new things. Obviously, down that hallway, there's the pressure plate, which, you know, you learn why the hole in the wall was there.
Yeah, it shoots out three little poison darts. If you're standing in the way, you'll get taken out. Mm. So be aware of these things. Like, the game is known for these traps in certain areas, and it rewards those that are being observant.
Yeah, and I like that. And obviously the thing with these is that generally the first one will stagger you a little bit, so the second ones are going to get you most likely.
Yeah. Now, head a little bit further up this corridor. There's another couple of mannequins, and at the end, a chest. Now, in the chest, you get to pick up the heavy crossbow +3.
Yeah,
I found that a little odd. There's not a lot of things in this game that come already upgraded. There's nothing in the previous game that come already upgraded. But you do get to pick up another heavy crossbow a little later on in the game. You get the opportunity by killing a red phantom. And that one's a +5. It's just odd.
No, yeah, I mean, I think it's cool.
Yeah. So the heavy crossbow is exactly the same as the light crossbow, but it just simply does more base damage and requires a little bit more strength to wield. I think the light only requires 13 strength, whereas this one requires 20. So if you got the 20 strength, mad not to be using it.
Absolutely. So back out onto the ledge above the pit, jump down to the doorway to the room with the ladder. Now back up the ladder and ramp and into an area in front of a fog gate. Now, this is the fog gate to the first boss of Earthen Peak, which is the one we're talking about today, the Covetous Demon.
Yeah, but just before we take him on, there is a little room off to the right in this little section, as you've come to expect, a couple more beetles, a couple more steelworkers, take him out.
And there's a chest with a trap, a trapped chest. When you wrote that in the notes, I was like, the chest is trapped in what? How can a chest be trapped? Yeah. And what's inside the chest? A torch. There's a torch in the chest.
Yeah, which I've got to say is my biggest problem with this game. I just can't stand that they just don't seem to have rhyme or reason for where they put a lot of items. I like to be rewarded for lateral thinking, and that would come in the way of getting what feels like a cool item. So if I discover a secret or do something unique to have to get to something, then I want something unique for it.
Whereas absolutely.
There's a part particularly that sticks out to me later on in the game where you pick up a fire seed and the fire seed's just out in the open, nowhere special, just, you know, on a corpse as you're walking through an area, which, okay, fair enough. You know, you got to get fire seeds somehow, but the fire seeds themselves seem like a fairly unique, cool kind of item to pick up. So I was like, oh, that kind of sucks. Only a few seconds earlier, I sort of found a secret area and all I got was like a Soul of the Lost Undead or something. So that should have been there. The Soul of the Lost Undead should have been out in the open. Whatever. Carried on. Didn't think much of it. Less than like a minute game time later, another chest just out in the open. No rhyme or reason to it. Fire seed. What the dick? Two within 30 seconds of each other. It wasn't a theme for the area or anything like that. Completely, like, felt out of place for the area, to be honest. It was a watery kind of area. Fire, water, don't mix. And, you know, it's as though they've just grabbed all the items, thrown them at the board, and wherever they've landed, they go, on, okay, that's where they'll go.
Yeah, I mean, if the torch was the way we thought it might be, where it's like you desperately rely on it, then that might have been an excellent pickup. And maybe they put that there in the days when that was their plan. But as it happens, the torch is effectively useless.
Yeah, but it's just one torch. It's like one of the most common items in the game, one of the weakest drops in the game, and
yes,
just in a chest.
So, on to the boss.
Yeah, sorry, my little salty rant there.
Salty?
Hmm.
Okay, I don't know that term. Other than, you know, things that taste salty.
Never mind.
I wasn't minding. So, the Covetous Demon, back to the fog door and in you go. Now, you can't summon anyone, any NPCs anyway, for this fight. Do you think you need to?
Heavens no. This is bar none the easiest boss fight that I've had in this game.
It's spectacularly easy.
Yeah, I actually have a bit of a story with this one. I was on the way out. I was playing the game and I had a party to be at. And I finally got to this fog gate. And
I wasn't invited to any party.
Oh, you should be a cool guy.
I often think that.
And yeah, been a little while since I'd come across the bonfire. I mean, it's an easy run now that I know the area, but when you don't, I was sort of carrying a lot of stuff and I felt like I'd made it quite far and I didn't want to risk losing it all by walking into this fog gate and finding out that it was a big, scary boss. So I, in my hurry to get out of there, just laid a quick summon sign down and went off to brush my teeth in the hopes that by the time I was done, somebody would have summoned me in. Sure enough, they had. So I helped this guy out, walked through the gate and came across the covetous demon. And I thought, shit, this looks terrifying. And then 30 seconds later, it was dead.
Yeah.
I was like, that was so easy. So I immediately desummoned from his world and immediately walked through the fog gate without thinking about it twice with just whatever I had on me and took him out first try, no worries. Just so easy.
Yeah.
That said, there's some good lore behind this one.
Yeah. I mean, the...
Yeah, absolutely.
He reminds me of... You've played Binding of Isaac. You introduced me to that game.
Yeah.
He reminds me of Gertie, the boss.
Yeah.
The big, huge, fat one.
Yeah, so it's this big Jabba the Hutt-looking wormy type gross thing. If the game were based on the Seven Deadly Sins, he would absolutely be gluttony. He's just disgusting. But he actually started out as a human, and he was a human that lusted after the Baneful Queen. Now, the Baneful Queen is going to be the main boss that we'll come across in the next section. So we'll be talking a lot more about her next week, but she was a woman driven by her pride and vanity, and the covetous demon, in his man form, lusted after her to the point where he turned to gorging himself on food when she wouldn't return his love.
Is that actually the thing?
What do you mean?
I don't know. I just haven't read this. So it's actually, he did actually...
No, I'm just making this shit up.
Oh, but you said it so confidently. yeah, but really, did it say in the guidebook or whatever? I mean, I haven't looked at it yet.
No, this is gleaned from the lore of the game.
Oh, I see. Okay. So he actually did get fat from binge eating.
Yeah.
A cautionary tale.
Yes. He he binged himself to the point of turning into the covetous demon.
Wow.
Yeah. So he has this insatiable hunger, and he has developed it from a desire to be with a woman that doesn't reciprocate his feelings. However, she seems to keep him around nonetheless due to her own vanity and feeling good that somebody's lusting after her despite her not wanting it. And so that's his sad story. But it makes for a interesting little development, because as you fight this guy, you can... as we said, take him on fairly easily just by beast-moding him. But if you walk into the arena, I only discovered this on my little playthrough this afternoon, just refreshing myself before recording. I walked into the arena and he wasn't there because I've obviously already killed him. And I noticed there's these pots hanging from the ceiling and I was just bored wasting time. So I shot the pots with a bolt and these undead laborers fell out. And I thought, oh, that's a bit odd. They were obviously bound up in these pots, whatever, didn't think much of it. But then I thought I'd look into it. And it turns out, if you walk into the arena and you shoot the pots immediately, then the undead laborers will fall out. And the covetous demon, in his insatiable hunger, will go after the undead laborers and eat them to the detriment of not even paying any attention to you. So... not only was he already incredibly easy, you walk in, you shoot the pots, there's like four or five of these laborers running around now, and he just spends his entire time chasing them down and eating them, and you can just attack his tail as he does it.
Wow, that's awesome.
Super easy fight.
See, I never knew that, but I like those little, you know,
innovations.
It'd be good if those innovations were on a harder boss.
Yeah.
Because like they would have put a fair amount of effort into that for essentially for nothing.
What? Yeah. The guy does have a really unique move, though. You would need to be struggling big time to ever encounter it, but if you do manage to be in front of him and get caught off guard with it, he licks you up and puts you into his mouth and chews you around a bit, and if you survive it, you have enough health that it doesn't kill you, you get spat out with nothing. So all of your items get de-equipped, no weapon or anything like that, armor, so you're now stuck taking on this guy completely naked with nothing, and you've got to quickly like fumble around your inventory to get your stuff back equipped so you can take him on a little further.
Yeah, but I mean, how many people have had a sudden moment of clarity and realized they were getting licked up by a fat dude and sprint naked from the room? I've been there.
You would if you could. You've been there.
What does that mean, you would if you could?
You're trapped.
Oh, I suppose. Yeah, no, I was just saying that's a realistic thing to happen.
So, covetous demon. That's his story.
Yeah, easy to kill. Nothing special. You can trade his soul with Strayed for the Bone Scythe.
which this one I found a little interesting. It's a bone scythe, and as it would suggest, it looks like something that you'd probably find from the Skeleton Lords. I just would have assumed it would have been weapon from them, but it turns out that it's the hardened spine of the Covetous Demon that you've obviously ripped out and turned into a scythe.
Predator style.
Hmm. Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, Mortal Kombat style.
Yeah. Beat him over the head with his own spine.
Yeah. Yoko Ono and John Lennon style.
Because John Lennon didn't have a spine?
Well, not after, you know, if he had a spine, he would have got rid of that lunatic. Anyway.
Good joke.
Oh, well.
Less funny when no one laughs, but sorry, good joke.
I just hate Yoko Ono. yeah.
Okay. So that's it for the boss of the area. From here, you exit the room and head to a bonfire.
Now, by that bonfire is Luca Teal, Taboo's favourite.
I found my thoughts growing hazy. My memories are fading, oldest first. The curse is doing its work upon me. I am frightened. Terribly so. If everything should fade, what will be left of me?
Yeah, this is, if you've been following the story so far, the third time you'll encounter her.
Mm-hmm.
And she opens up about her story a bit more, and it becomes a lot more depressing at this point. She's actually really terrified of what's going to happen to her when she gets taken over by the curse. She seems to be completely aware of what's happening, and her memory is fading, whereas most other players, as their memory starts to fade, they just get confused or doddery. She actually seems to be perfectly conscious of her failing memory and how she's forgetting things, and it concerns her because she actually sort of talks about how she's trudging these lands to find her brother who disappeared. She describes him as the most decorated swordsman from Mira, and she knows that he went out one day and never came back, and so she's sort of trying to hunt him down and find out where he is, and she's worried that if she gets completely taken over by this curse, she may even forget about him.
It's quite sad. And it would be quite terrifying, I think, to be, you know, Luca Teal is powerful, a scary, powerful swordswoman, right? And to have all that power and all that ability and to have solved all the problems in your life by just training more with your sword and then to encounter this problem where for all your power and all your might and all your ability to control your surroundings, the surety of your demise is inevitable.
A bit depressing.
Hmm.
So that's where we're going to cut the episode. That's it for the Harvest Valley and the very, very beginning area of Earthen Peak. We'll carry on from this point next episode. But for now, remember that you had the Estus Flask Shard, so you could probably make a little trip back to Majula.
Mm-hmm. Where you'll also find Cloanne.
Yep. She's now sitting just outside Lenegrast's shop, which I got to say, it seemed a bit odd. She doesn't seem to acknowledge that Lenegrast is her father at all. She doesn't seem to even be aware.
Well, she says that blacksmith in there looks just like my father. He was a blacksmith too.
So it seems like she may have last seen him before he went undead, and she hasn't quite made the connection yet.
Yes, but she's an idiot. I mean, how stupid. Yeah. Like, how many guys look like Lenegrast, undead or otherwise, right? And so then you're hanging out with this blacksmith who looks just like your father, who was a blacksmith, who keeps looking at you. She even says he keeps eyeing me off. It's like, maybe that's your father. You know that the curse exists. You're not a freaking idiot.
It did seem very odd, because he, on the other hand, the moment you talk to him after she returns, fully acknowledges it. So he's perfectly aware. So it's like, well, they're both a bit to blame. She's dumb, and he's not smart enough to go out and say, hey, how you doing? I'm your dad.
Although maybe the last time he saw her, he was still not undead, and he's ashamed of his undead visage, or he doesn't want to scare her, because she still looks all normal. Cleavy. Like, all cleavy.
Claven.
Cleavy. I'm gonna use that one. Well, oh my, aren't you a cleavy lass?
Ow.
Yeah.
What?
That was me getting slapped.
Oh, okay. I thought that was you slapping ass.
Yeah, I realised after I said it that it sounded so much like that.
So sexual.
Yeah, that's not what I meant. I meant I meant that she slaps me. That's what I meant. For God's sake, that's what I meant, right?
Oh, very good.
I just have a girly. When I get slapped, I make a girly noise.
Now, while we're on the topic of Lenegrast, the area had a lot of Titanite shards, so maybe consider upgrading your weapon or two while you're here as well.
Or your catalyst, if you are sensible.
Hmm.
Now, instead of doing tip of the week, we're going to do mod of the week.
Yeah.
Which I suppose, you know, the modern community is really taking off, and I love mods. So we had to get rid of tips of the week because we were running out of tips.
Well, we weren't. I mean, I was still getting them sent in, but I just felt like the quality was dropping and I didn't want to make it feel like I was barrel scraping.
All those tips you all sent in, they were shit. No.
I mean what I said.
That's mean.
We love you.
Anyway, so.
Mod of the week. The one that I chose this week. A lot of the mods that are going to come up are probably going to be some sort of a texture replacement or otherwise. This one is a texture replacer and it relies on having Jido Sato. So Jido Sato itself could be the mod of the week, but we've already explained these different types of add-ons that you make to the game to allow you to do different things like your sweet effects and your ENBs and all of that. So with Jido Sato, you can enable one setting, which allows you to do texture overriding, and from that point on, you can replace the textures. So the mod that I chose was Clean UI by a guy called Clamp Klompf.
Clamp Klompf.
And the reason I loved this one particularly is because it solved problems that I was having with the game, and that was mostly that when I get summoned in to do some PvP, a big message across the bottom of the screen comes up that says, you know, you are getting summoned into X's world or what have you. And that message covers up the souls.
That's so annoying.
Which, if you're getting invaded or going to invade someone, you want to know how many souls you're about to lose, because you might go, crap, I've got 500,000 souls. I don't want to lose these. I better, you know, black crystal straight out of there.
Yeah.
It also covers up the utility slot where you can put things like your Estus flasks and that kind of stuff.
It's really annoying.
Which, you know, you obviously want to toggle to the one that you want at the time for the fight, because you might want to go in guns blazing with your throwing knives or hexing urn, or make sure that you've definitely got your Estus flask out. So yeah, this one, the Clean UI, takes all of those textures and makes them see-through, and it looks really nice and it really suits the game. Also, when you bring up your inventory and that kind of stuff, there's a nice translucency to it, so you can see things that are going on behind. It just works. I love it.
Beautiful.
So check it out. Clean UI. We'll put the link in our show notes.
And Kampf Klopf can thank us. Is it Klopf or Kopf?
Klopf.
Klopf. Kampf Klopf. Klopf. I see.
So, question of the week.
You always foist this on me at the last minute.
Well, I had one job, Church.
I do happen to know it's coming every week.
Yes, and you don't do much else.
Oh, no, but sometimes I do think of a question, which is why we've had questions in the past. Now I'm shouldered with thinking of a new one.
Hard cut time?
Yep.
Action.
So this week's question pertains to the Project Beast leak. And the question is, what would you like to see in Project Beast? What didn't work in this game and Demon's Souls and Dark Souls 1 that needs to change? And what was great that needs to be improved upon or kept? What would you like to see in Project Beast?
Yeah, so at the end of Dark Souls 1, I made a big list of things that I hoped they had done for Dark Souls 2 before it came out. And some of them were met, things like death counters and that kind of thing. So what to you is important that you feel like they didn't quite hit the mark on or completely omitted from this game?
Yeah, I'd be really interested to see what the community wants. So that's the podcast for this week. Thank you all for listening. Next episode, we'll continue Earthen Peak.
That's correct. I love how bad our outros are.
Yeah, how do you wrap up a podcast? I don't know.
Praise the sun?
Praise the sun.
See you next week.
Oh, yeah, see you next week. Yeah.
The Dark Souls 2 has been a Screaming and Digital production. You can contact us on info@thedarksouls2.com, join the community at facebook.com/thedarksouls2, tweet @thedarksouls2, or leave a comment on the show notes. If you've enjoyed the show, please consider leaving a review on iTunes or spread the word. Our theme tune is The Knights of Darkness by Zero Project.
Yeah, so in sticking with the theme, I think that's the end of the episode. Praise the sun.
Your mouth was full. It's like, so in sticking with the theme, I think it's the episode. Praise the sun.
In sticking with the theme, my mouth is full of jism. Praise the sun.
What? Why'd you say jism?
Because we're talking about comely women.
Oh my god, and salty this and the comely yum that. Okay, we can't leave that half garbled bullshit in there. Okay.